Desiring God behind the blog, David Mathis here with Tony Ranke and Jonathan Parnell, looking at a full November of content here at Desiring God and hoping to provide some background and backstage passes into how that content was created and brought about. First thing I want to start with is the Advent ebook. Just went live on the site this past Monday, and we're recording this here on the 30th of November, the last day of November. This past Monday, we launched the Advent ebook, and there's a story behind the creation and coming together of that book. One of you guys want to jump in with some of the details?
I don't remember actually when we first started talking about that. When was that? Early on? You know, the funny story is Melissa, my wife, mentioned this an idea to me about this in September. She's like, you guys should do an Advent
book.
So, but that's the thing. I don't know. I think, Mathis, maybe you had suggested it first. But it's funny because now that the ebook's out, she kind of grins and she's like,
she thinks it's her idea.
Well,
it was. Next time she has an idea, you should bring it to us.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, why did we not hear about this earlier?
Yeah.
The idea started, I believe, or one of the manifestations of it is from this Solid Joys app we're doing. If you would like a daily devotional from the ministry of John Piper, check out the Solid Joys app in the iTunes store. We'll put a link to it in the blog post that accompanies this little podcast episode. So as we were preparing the Solid Joys for December, we're thinking, oh, this is Christmas Advent content. Should we make this into some kind of little e-reader for Advent? And so as we put the content together, the three of us, you know, Tony, Jonathan, and I, we sat down, I believe it was a Thursday afternoon.
That's right.
We said, turn everything else off, silence your cell phone, turn your email off. We're doing a deep dive into the Piper Reservoir, and we're pulling out stuff that's Christmas, December, Advent-related from over 32 years of ministry. So all three of us dove in. And probably all three of us provided about 10 or so devotionals. I think I took the 80s, and Jonathan took the 90s, and Tony took all of John's articles, and each of us pulled out 10 to 12 different devotional segments. We try to shoot for 300 or so words on these devotionals, and we pulled those out. I remember one day, we got them all together, printed all those devotionals out, one on each page, and spread them across the room, and then tried to put them in order and work in order that would go from December 2nd.
That was you.
That was all David.
That's the royal.
You like to print stuff and lay it on the floor.
The royal we. The Advent devotional begins next Sunday, this coming Sunday, December 2nd, and goes through the 24th, and we even have a reading for the 25th. Yeah. And we're really excited about that December product here. First time we've done that.
Yeah. And so that's an ebook that can be downloaded from the DG blog and website, and it's also going to be content integrated into the app, right?
Correct, yeah. So if you do the December 5th reading of Solid Joys, that'll correspond to the December 5th reading in the Advent ebook. And that's available in PDF format, Mobi format.
For Kindle.
Which is for Kindle. And then ebook format, which is for?
EPUB for
EPUB.
iBooks.
Okay,
and
very
I think
good.
Also, yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
Thank you guys for doing that. That was a good team effort.
Oh, man, it was fun.
Yeah, it's neat. I hadn't thought about it. There's so many ways to digest that content now with the app and then with the three different files, and that's cool.
Yeah. I had a flurry of emails from people in local churches this past week asking if they can use the ebook, the Advent ebook in readings in church with their small group, even print out copies for people in the congregation. And we said, yes, you know, we bless that, do that, use it, spread it, make it a benefit to your family, your small group, your congregation. So please pursue that.
That's great.
Another thing we've had popping here recently at the blog is the Brothers series. Mm-hmm. It's a series of blog posts on the theme of Brothers, We're Not Professionals, or in that the spirit of that book that Pastor Piper has a revision coming out here in January. Anybody want to talk about that Brothers series as it came together?
Yeah, I think this was a coffee brainstorm. We were at a Starbucks close by and had some pens and paper, and we're talking about who we would, you know, ask to contribute to a little project like this. And we threw down a bunch of names, and then we went and split it up and went and emailed, and graciously these guys were most of them were had the time and were eager to write. And so now there's 10 total posts of how many words, probably the tops 1,000.
Yeah, we told the guys do 1,000 words or less,
and they're just pastoral exhortations to pastors, from pastors for pastors, about pastoral ministry. And The traction has been really encouraging. Actually had a reader on Twitter who was like, "Are you guys going to turn this into an ebook?" And that's actually precisely what we hope to do now, is to take these blog posts, and I think David, you've already put them into one document together, and hope to get that out. What's the date? End of this month? End of December? Actually.
We're hoping for December. Did we say the?
I think the launch 27th.
Yeah, okay. That's right. Yep.
Great. So be looking for that December 27th. Here's a quick list of what's on there. The first one that we went live with is from R.C. Sproul Jr. called "Brothers, We Are Not Professors." I like that title. The next one was "Brothers, We Are Not Superstars" by Danny Aiken, president of Southeastern Seminary. Thabiti Anyabwile wrote on "Brothers, We Should Stink." About we should be with the sheep and stink like the sheep, be around the sheep. Mike Bullmore wrote on "Brothers, Train Up the Next Generation." Ray Ortland, "Brothers, Build a Gospel Culture." Doug Wilson, memorably, as always, "Brothers, We Are Not Sisters." And then we have two from Pastor Piper, "Brothers, Supernatural Does Not Mean Stupid," as well as "Brothers, The Ministry is Supernatural." And in those two posts, John's really getting at, number one, what this conference coming up in early February is about. It's "Brothers, We Are Still Not Professionals" conference, that the ministry is irreducibly supernatural. And then on the other side of that, "Brothers, supernatural does not mean stupid." And that's a helpful post you want to check out. And then this week, "Brothers, Live a Visible, Exemplary, Everyday Life" from Jeff Vanderstelt. And then finally, the last post in the series from our own Sam Crabtree, executive minister at Bethlehem Baptist, "Brothers, Praise Somebody Other Than God." And hopefully you're provoked by the title and would love to read and find out how Sam stays orthodox with his careful explanation of several biblical texts in that post.
I think this, I mean, there's so many contours in this series. Mm-hmm. This is really exciting. I mean, yeah. These guys who, I mean, theologically agree on a lot of important things, but I mean, as far as the actual look of their ministries are pretty diverse, and I think this is exciting to see them all come together to exhort fellow pastors.
Another thing going on in Desiring God here, especially in the last month, 6 weeks or so, is the new podcast, Authors on the Line. Tony has been leading this up. Tony is showing his multifaceted giftings in the way that he's able to pull these podcasts together. He does the editorial, he does the cutting on it, the editing on it. Really, really amazing. Tony, thanks for what you're doing with the podcast.
Man,
I've been personally helped by it. Give us again the thought behind it and then some of the highlights here from the last few weeks.
Yeah, the idea is to talk to authors who have written fairly recent books. Mostly these are authors who have new books, and really getting them to explain the core message of their book in a way that's understandable to me, to an average audience. I mean, I really think of myself as an average Christian guy who just wants to understand things that are usually over my head. Mm-hmm. And so the thought is to get on the phone with different scholars who are really thinking deeply about specific topics. Our most recent one was with Michael McClymont, who's a highly educated Jonathan Edwards scholar, and just asking him questions, explain to us Edwards on the Trinity. And so we've done that with different theologians like Constantine Campbell talking about union with Christ. Recently, we got Timothy Keller and Albert Mohler on the line back to back, week to week. Timothy Keller talked to us about vocation. And I really pressed him with the questions about, you know, what does a Christian do when they don't like their job? They just really don't like showing up to work on Monday morning. What's wrong with their thinking? And help us there. And then Albert Mohler on leadership, his new book is just really outstanding. And so talked with Albert Mohler. So the heart is really just to get these guys on the phone and to have them express sort of the core message that they're trying to communicate in a way that's understandable, that's clear. So some fun.
And folks can get to that podcast through Desiring God website. If they want to just go straight at it in the iTunes store, what would you have them search?
Yeah, the easiest way to get to it is through the iTunes store. They can search on podcasts and Authors on the Line.
Okay,
so
great.
If they just type that in, or if they follow through with any of the other DG podcasts like Theology Refresh, they'll find it as well.
Very good. Thanks for doing that. Looking forward to those coming episodes here. You got to a couple of recordings going on today. I don't know if you can mention that.
Yeah,
or not.
Two going on today. I can mention the first one, which is an interview with Paul Mayer, mm-hmm. who is a Lutheran historian, and talking with him about the nativity, certain aspect of the nativity. And then I'm going to follow up with a little interview with Pastor John. So I'm actually going to get him on the phone for about 10 minutes, and so he'll be making his first AOTL appearance.
That's right.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
On the phone from less than a mile away.
That's right, exactly.
Jonathan, you did a post recently on Charles Spurgeon and asked the question whether he was off his rocker.
That's right.
Explain that to us.
I had read this article in, I think it was World Magazine by Andrea Sue Peterson about Powerful Inferences was the name of the article. And she talked about how as we read Scripture and we build into our lives an understanding of who God is, then we're able to resolve things. And she talked about one example. She has a friend who convinced that, of course, as Jesus teaches us, we should love God with our minds, you know, with all of our souls, our bodies, with our minds. Her friend considers, you know, I sleep, you know, 7 hours a day. That's a lot of time in a lifetime. So her friend began to pray about glorifying God in her dreams. So this idea of I should glorify God with my mind, well, one third of my life, my mind is asleep, you know, essentially, or in a sleep state. And so she said, well, I should pray about how I dream. I want to dream good things. And so I thought that was interesting, just that based upon what we're told about God by him, what that the implications of that for life and what we how that affects us. And so that's one example. But then she actually refers to this story about Charles Spurgeon, which I was fascinated by, about how he saw a verse and then he made these implications and kind of wrung out some application. And the question was, is that legitimate? Did he do the right thing there? Can we do the same thing? And so the post is just my way of trying to explore that and agree with Spurgeon and hopefully make some application for us every day in our everyday lives.
Even if Spurgeon didn't have the benefit of, you know, the last 100 years of scholarship, 20th century and early 21st century biblical scholarship, he's got some really good instincts, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
And the way he preaches, yeah, the kind of things he says, the things that we'll discover in his writings over 100 years later, he did have very good instincts, as many Bible guys and Bible women do.
Yep, exactly. I think Spurgeon reading kind of pre-critically, he can help us to kind of get beneath the concepts of what's being said. And, you know, it's good to get in word studies and diagram the original languages and get in there. And then it's also good to not get lost in those things, be able to step back and ask the questions of, you know, what is God saying to me here? And what does it mean for how I treat my wife and how I play with my kids? And so that's the sort of thing that I always want to drive myself to and help lead our readers in, as far as keep asking those questions, keep bringing out what God says in his word and get to, you know, what does this really mean? How does this look in everyday life? So that post is one little effort in that.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right, David, I'm going to put you on the line. This is what it's like to be on the line, okay?
All right.
You wrote a post called Improving Our Baptism. Mm-hmm. So give us your heart behind this post. What were you trying to communicate? What's the takeaway?
Oh, man. Something that has grown on me in recent years has been the significance of the church ordinances. You call them sacraments, the two, or ordinances, whatever it's a term, however you're going to pack it full of meaning. And Calvin's view of the Lord's table has been very helpful to me in having more than a mere memorialistic view and appreciating the means of grace and appropriating that union with Christ and ongoing bathing in the gospel for my soul by eating and drinking in faith at the Lord's table. And that has connections then to baptism. And I think I first was confronted by this in a class at RTS Orlando, where they talked about improving your baptism. They were quoting Westminster, number 167 in the Westminster Larger Catechism, and it talks about improving our baptism. And that sounds strange on the surface. And then you dig into what is meant by that, and Westminster talks about, in the time of temptation, bringing the reality of our baptism to mind, not merely the externals, but the significance of it, that we are in Christ, that the church has declared to us, in particular those of us who have been baptized as believers, that the church leadership believes us to be in Christ. Yeah. And there's a beauty in remembering the reality of our baptism in times of temptation, as well as when the administration of the ordinance is being given to others. So we don't, let's hope, just sit idly by observing someone else's baptism, but there's a way in which we participate by faith, a way in which we ourselves walk back through by faith our own unique one-time baptism, being in the waters and having that symbolized in death and resurrection with Jesus symbolized in the waters. So my encouragement was to readers, improve your baptism. It is not just a thing that happened in the past merely. It's something to bring to mind by faith. It's another way of walking yourself through the gospel and living a gospel-centered life at the table, in marriage, in Bible reading, in experiencing someone else's baptism or calling your own to mind in time of temptation. And I hope that people got some help there from Westminster 167.
Mm-hmm. Well said. That's very good.
Something else we should cover here is our trip down to ETS.
Yep.
Several of us from Desiring God drove over to Milwaukee across the no cell phone zone interstate and as we went across Wisconsin for the Evangelical Theological Society in Milwaukee. And there were some significant happenings there. Jonathan, you want to give us any update from ETS?
Yeah, it was a good time. We had unfortunately Tony was sick, so he couldn't make the trip with us, which was sad. But we had a good time there, meeting with some partnership stuff, and was encouraged by what God's doing through just our friends in kind of the Reformed world of web ministry. It was great. We also had lunch Friday with Kevin Van Hooser, who we all appreciate here. I personally appreciate Kevin Van Hooser. Read Drama of Doctrine a few years ago and was just a kind of coalesced with some things and made a big impact on me as far as John Piper's influence on me and the God-centeredness of God for sure. But then reading Van Hooser, kind of the compliment came that, you know, our theological method should also be God-centered. And so I began, Van Hooser helped me kind of build a theological method, even the way we think about God should be God-centered. And so that was kind of his impact on me that's kind of been enduring. And so it was a joy to meet him for the first time and to talk with him and hang out with him. And actually, Pastor John was there too. We had David, Marshall, Siegel, Dr. Van Hooser, and Pastor John. It was a neat time together.
Also, we met up with the guys from the Reformed Forum who are in Milwaukee, Camden Busey and Jared Oliphant. And they were kind to ask Jonathan and I some questions about Desiring God, and that recording is now available online as a Reformed Forum, and we'll do a link to that here in the blog post.
Those guys are so good at that.
Yes.
Dave and I, we were just watching the ease that they just did the recording in. And,
oh, yeah, that's
and
right.
It's just smooth. It's smooth, real smooth. So
we
if they're
to
listening
that.
To this, man, you guys are great. Thanks for that.
Also, we were able to meet up with Greg Allison and talk about the Doctrine of the Church for the Theology Refresh podcast, as well as Eric Tonis, who did two great recordings with us for the podcast. One on how the Christian orients towards sports and athletics is really good. I'm very excited to release that here in a few days at Desiring God. And then another on the jealousy of God. Eric's written on that, and it's a very helpful little session on the jealousy of God, which he's a kind of expert in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those will be on the Theology Refresh podcast.
Yeah, and mention the deal with the Theology Refresh. Currently, we're having some problems with the actual subscription on iTunes. So right now, all of the recordings for these are available on our site, and we're working right now with Apple to try to figure out the problem with the subscription in iTunes. So listen on our site and stay tuned. We'll get that back up and running as soon as possible. We have Goggin, who kind of holds the site together. He's our developer. He's working hard to figure out what's going on with that. So
yeah, that's right.
So we got things for you to listen to, and that's great. But we also want you to read. And Tony did a post on four reasons why men don't read and one solution. Would you tell us about that?
Yeah,
Tony?
One of the reasons is they're listening to podcasts nowadays. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, there's four different reasons that I've found as I've tried to disciple young guys who struggle with reading. I mean, there's a number of reasons why they don't read, and so I just kind of put those reasons together into a little blog post. And then in a recent podcast, and when I talked with Al Mohler, we spent a little bit of time at the end of the podcast recording, and I just asked him, you know, what do you see as a trend of men and reading in the church? And he said that he sees the challenges equally. I mean, he's very concerned about men not reading in the church. There just aren't any hard stats about men and literacy within the church, especially. It's very hard to gauge, but it just seems like that a lot of guys struggle here in this area of reading books. And so he suggested one practical thing to do is for a pastor to really look at his church and to evaluate the theology and the practices that happen in the church and see if there's a weakness that can be addressed. And if there is a weakness that a pastor can see in the church, he can gather around himself a dozen or so guys to read a book or to think through a topic and to really press towards a solution to a problem. I mean, that's kind of what drives guys to do stuff, is to fix things, right? Mm-hmm. We love to fix things together. And so it's one way to get guys to read is to give them a problem that needs to be solved in a theology book or a practical book that potentially could help drive towards a solution. So I thought that was really helpful. Four reasons men don't read, with one practical application is the blog post title. So
that's good. I know, have experienced the same thing. I have never had much success, or I have really wanted to try, in hosting a male book club. But when you disciple a man toward greater Christ-likeness, toward the use of his life in ministry and mission, and then draw in reading resources as part of that greater goal. Yes. But that's how I myself became reader.
That's right.
It wasn't because I just like printed words on a page. It was there was a bigger vision of something to
after. Yeah.
And reading came along as an aid to that.
That's very good. That's not the end-all solution, because then you have to train guys to just read for the pure enjoyment of it. To find it, it's always going to be difficult. It's always going to be a discipline. But you can also read for a difficult pleasure, as Harold Blom talks about, you know, the famous lit professor and author from Yale. I mean, you have to train that side too. But I think you can start there with more of the utilitarian side of things.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. A couple of updates here on Pastor Piper here before we close the behind the blog for this week. John is now almost done with his final preaching series. This past one on complementarity was the next to last one. Now in December, the new pastor at Bethlehem, Jason Meyer, will do an Advent series, and then John is scheduled for the last Sunday of the year. I believe that's December 30th. Maybe that's the weekend of the 29th and 30th, and he will give his final kind of scheduled message in 2012 at Bethlehem. And in January, he'll now be the associate, God willing, be the associate for Preaching and Vision and be done on Easter Sunday, March 30th. So there's probably some other sermon or half sermon he'll do in there, but now, other than that final week of December, the pulpit reins have really been turned over to Jason Meyer here at Bethlehem. Also for John, we have this, Jonathan, maybe you can give us the update on this. We asked people to give us their most memorable, life-changing Piper messages, and we're working on a added feature to the app. Tell us about that.
That's right. We pulled together 365 sermons that our readers, you guys, have recommended, have shared with us that this was a sermon that impacted you. And right now, we've kicked the ball down the field in the app, and hopefully coming out pretty soon will be this new feature that has, when you open up the app, the Desiring God app, the sermon will be the very top. You just have to hit one little click there with your thumb, and the sermon begins to play. And it's going to be a sermon that one of our readers has chosen that has impacted them. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that. You know, still in some, you know, working out some stuff here, but at least there's been a design for it. We have an idea of what it looks like, and excited to see that coming out. So thanks for asking, Dave.
Personally, I'm very excited about this. So often when I'm going out for a jog or going to be in the car for 15 or 20 minutes, I want something to listen to. And so I fumble through our site or the Gospel Coalition site or the Village Church podcast looking for one to select, and I can spend 5 or 10 minutes looking for the sermon to click on. Here, the hope is you go into Desiring God app, you push one button, and you're listening in a matter of a couple seconds.
That's right. And there's the other layer of makes it really special is that it's a sermon that we know. It's not just that we've kind of, you know, curated it and brought it together because we think it's important, but it's a sermon that our readers have said, hey, this is one that really impacted me and God used to change my life. Some of these stories are, I mean, just significant life-change mm-hmm. stories. And so we want to share that with our readers, and I'm excited to see that happen. So,
one last thing to mention is the 5 devotionals on the glory of God that Pastor Piper did, video devotionals here at the beginning of November. We just had him in the studio one day, and we said, hey, John, let's give this a go. What do you think? And he came up with those on the spot. It goes so deep, and he's has taught on the glory of God for so many years. They just came right out of him, mm-hmm. and we did those 5. There's about 2 or 3 minutes each. And I think those are a very helpful resource for those who are just getting into the theology of Pastor Piper or want to go deeper in the central biblical theme of the glory of God. I think it's very helpful for all of us. Thank you for joining us on Behind the Blog.